all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Thank you, Don Ruin. Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio. It's a Tuesday morning. It's June the 13th, 2023, National Call Your Doctor Day, as we talked about in the previous segment here. Coming up this hour, under examination, the advisory referendum process in Wisconsin. Legislative Republicans had no problem using advisory referendums to boost turnout in order to help a conservative state Supreme Court candidate, but now they want to restrict local units of government from holding advisory referendums in a classic case of democracy for me, but not for thee. We'll talk to Hans Breitenmoser and Elizabeth McCrank about that in just a little while. If you missed our last hour about what Trump Republicans could do to protest Trump's federal prosecution in a way that could hurt all Americans, you can catch the show anytime by subscribing to us as a podcast at Apple, Spotify, all the usual places that have podcasts. So does the Civic Media website. That's civicmedia.us, where you can find every show there. Each hour's programming is a separate podcast episode. Listen there on the website or subscribe and listen on demand. Our studio line number here is 844-967-2789, and our email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. We're happy to hear from you any old time, and catch us on social media, too. We're not only at the Up North News Facebook page and the Civic Media, the Up North News Facebook page, the Civic Media Facebook page, the Bull Falls Radio Facebook page, also Up North News on YouTube. So we are... We have no lack of options for you to tune in and listen on the Civic Media app as well, as somebody very close to me does during her commute to work every day, just kind of plugs the phone in to the car and listens through the app that way. Aaron Zommers joins us from Madison as well there. It's a little cloudy and cool up here, and I know we've kind of had a tale of two different weather systems and temperatures. What are things like down in the southern part of the state this morning?
Also a little bit cool. It was more so yesterday, but this morning it had just rained when I got up.
Apparently we've got a nice little warm-up on the way, and we're going to get the full update from Weatherology with that forecast coming up in just a bit. But in this segment, I wanted to lay out something that we had hinted at a couple of weeks back and continues to be a concern for people who watch Wisconsin elections, and that's who we'll be watching over those elections, who will oversee them here in what is, of course, a critical battleground state. There's a lot of uncertainty as the state's top nonpartisan elections official comes to the end of her term. Looking at a story here from Harm Van Huzen of Associated Press and Report for America, you see Republicans who control the legislature could finally have a chance to oust the elections chief with whom they have been sparring over conspiracy theories and other fantasies, and then name their own appointee to administer over the Wisconsin Elections Commission. On the other hand, a recent state Supreme Court ruling that was actually good to conservatives could backfire on them, depending on how they want to handle the replacement of Megan Wolf. She is nearing the end and has not commented on whether she's going to seek reappointment to a new term. All across the country, you see elections officials have been leaving the profession. There's been just unrelentless threats made, heated rhetoric, and of course, just the exhausting chore of telling the truth, even as elected officials continue to lie about the 2020 election and beyond, and so distrust. And while maybe they think they're doing it in a way that is not harmful, but simply politics, other people are taking them at their word and ratcheting up the rhetoric, leading to harassment and even death threats. And so it's no wonder that more elections officials are leaving. And as I said, we don't know what Megan Wolf is going to do in running the Wisconsin Elections Commission. But right now, She is in charge of a department that is overseen by the 6 members of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. That would be 3 Democrats and 3 Republicans in a system that was created by Republicans to lead to gridlock. But this person would help give guidance to the more than 1,800 local clerks who actually run Wisconsin's elections. There is no single state election process here in Wisconsin. It is roughly 1,800 individual local elections, which means you need somebody professional and organized. It also means that it is virtually impossible to tamper with and rig a state election when you have as many checks and balances in place. But that hasn't stopped Republicans from claiming that more needs to be done to address quote-unquote irregularities. Well, if Megan Wolf's position were to become vacant, election commissioners could recommend a new administrator, and if 45 days pass without a nomination, a legislative committee controlled by Republicans could appoint a temporary administrator for up to a year, and there's no telling what that person might be like. However, recall that in the past year, the state Supreme Court ruled that Fred Prehn, a member of the Natural Resources Board, could stay on the board even though his term had expired because the Senate had not appointed a replacement. And so gridlock in the legislature could lead to real uncertainty about who would fill the Wisconsin Elections Commission administrator role, temporarily even, much less permanently. A weatherology forecast update is coming up next. You're up north. As promised, complete with bongos, here's Bette Midler's version. Do you wanna dance and hold my hand? Tell me you're my lover man. Oh, baby, do you wanna dance? I mean, nothing against Bobby Freeman, but come on. Bette Midler there. 56 degrees right now on Lake Wasota, 48 at Lac Coeur d'Alene, 54 on Lake Butamore, 54 on Lake Koshkonong, and 54 in Port Washington on a day that's going to see the start of a warm-up eventually here in Wisconsin, a very nice week ahead. And here with the forecast details after a few days away, we get to welcome back our friend Jennifer Wojcicki to tell us more about it. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning.
So we have some nice conditions on the way. Another little warm, a little cloudy and cool here, but tell us what we can expect statewide as we head into midweek.
Yeah, like you said, overall not too bad of a week coming in ahead. Kind of all over the place as far as individual locations, but it does look like a good chance for rain showers for most today, all except for west central Wisconsin around Amory and Baldwin. Temperatures also look all over the board below average for most, except again for west central Wisconsin. Well, they'll be around the lower 80s, and they should actually be around about the upper 70s, so just slightly above average for this time of the year. Upper 50s to the mid 60s for southern Wisconsin today, low to mid 60s in central Wisconsin, and mid 70s around Richland Center to the southwestern parts of the state today. Wednesday looks like a slight chance for rain showers around Wausau and Wisconsin Rapids over to Oshkosh, but dry for everyone else tomorrow. Cloud cover around Waukesha and Milwaukee, otherwise sunshine for the rest. Also warmer for everyone tomorrow, but still all over the place, kind of like today. Cooler along the along Lake Michigan, but then mid-70s to mid-80s for everyone else at or above average. Thursday, slight chance for rain and thunderstorms for southern Wisconsin. Temperatures pretty similar to the previous day, otherwise sunny skies for everyone else and just slightly cooler, not much of a difference. Then on Friday, it looks like sunny for most with a slight chance for rain coming in by the afternoon hours around Baldwin and Amory. Temperatures again ranging between the mid-70s to mid-80s across the board and still a little bit cooler towards the Michigan lakefront.
Nice to have you back, Jennifer. Did you get to do anything nice during the few days you were taking a break from us?
Thank you. Yeah, I went to Poland.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. What did you see?
A lot. Yeah, I went to Warsaw and Krakow, and I saw a lot of castles and palaces, and I went to a salt mine. That was interesting.
Jennifer, I am so jealous. That is totally on my bucket list for the same family history. Was there anything genealogy related about it, or just tourism?
Yeah, no, my entire family is from Poland. So it was fun to, I was there with my dad and hearing, you know, pointing out places that he's been and learning a lot more about his family history. So yeah, it was really cool.
Oh, that's very cool. Jennifer, thanks for telling us about it. Have a great day.
Thanks so much. You too.
All right. Jennifer Wojcicki from Weatherology joining us at just about 7:19. There's not much to tell you in sports because the Brewers were off. They play the Twins at Target Field in Minneapolis this evening, 6:40. You can hear that game on Oshkosh Air Support, 98.3 FM, 1100 AM in the Fox Valley. And in Richland Center, listen to news from the center, 107.7 FM and 1450 AM for games this evening. And then again tomorrow afternoon. And the Denver Nuggets are the NBA champions, first time ever in Nuggets franchise history, 47 years worth, winning that title by defeating the Eastern Conference Miami Heat in game five last night in Denver. Miami, the eighth seed, making it that far to the NBA Finals. So you have to ask yourself, would the Milwaukee Bucks been able to go that far as well if the Heat hadn't beat them in the first round of the playoffs? Of course, we'll never know, but got to tip your cap to Miami for going as far as they did to get to the NBA Finals. It looks like there's going to be a huge overhaul of the way that alcohol laws are structured in Wisconsin. If it's done right, you may not notice a lot of it, but it's going to help a lot of people behind the scenes. And I say that as a former legislator who had to figure out the current system for regulating alcohol production, distribution, and sale. Three different things. And in the 1930s, after Prohibition, a new system was created, a three-tier system. It was designed to prevent monopolies so that one company couldn't produce and sell wholesale and retail the liquor that they made, that there would be room for producers, but then there had to be distributors before you could get to retailers. Well, over the decades, there have been many changes out there that affect people, like, special events. There's things like wedding barns and craft brewers and people that would like to, you know, ship alcoholic products across state lines. So this has been something that is years in the making. And again, because I haven't seen the details, I'm choosing to be optimistic about this, largely because of having seen it from inside the Capitol, that if Republican lawmakers and Democratic Governor Tony Evers' administration have all been involved in these negotiations, and it looks like a new bill was introduced last Friday, is scheduled for a public hearing today, which means the legislature could pass it in just a couple of weeks. And if that happens, there will be people that say it properly updates state laws in a time that saw the birth of, you know, beer giant Miller in Milwaukee, even as smaller craft brewers like New Glarus, which makes Spotted Cow, make beers that are available for sale only in Wisconsin. The bill would require venues that sell or allow alcohol at special events to get a permit or a license to operate legally. There would be wineries that could open earlier in the morning, the same time as bars, because right now, again, the antiquated system has two different sets of rules. There would be the creation of new guidance for contract brewing, winemaking, distilling. You see the small distilleries that are springing up, you know, all over Wisconsin as well. Brandon Scholes is president and CEO of the Wisconsin Grocers Association, and he says this bill will address issues that have become, quote, a daily pain in the butt for retailers, according to an article written by Scott Bauer for the Associated Press. Scholes calls it a long time in coming. And Scott Bauer writes, perhaps the biggest change is creating a new division within the State Department of Revenue to regulate and oversee regulating the alcohol industry and enforcing the law, because one of the loudest targets of criticism under the current system was the lack of a dedicated state office to interpret and enforce the regulations. But that was a rather tall order anyway, because again, the laws themselves have not really kept up with changes in, you know, the hospitality industry, restaurants and bars, groceries, again, the small craft brewers that have popped up along with the mega brewers as well. Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss had fought off attempts to make piecemeal changes over the years and said instead he wanted a more comprehensive bill and was optimistic that what passes the legislature will be signed by Governor Evers. A wide array of those involved in the alcohol industry have already registered in support of the bill. Everybody from New Glarus Brewing to Molson Coors to Quick Trip, the Wisconsin Craft Beverage Coalition, the Grocers Association, the Wisconsin Wine and Spirit Institute. And as Speaker Voss put it, it has wide support because, quote, everybody gets something out of this and it doesn't do harm to anyone else. If that is all the case, and if this is a responsible package that comes through, it leads me, Aaron, to pose this question. If they show that they can do this with alcohol, with keeping up with changes in society and with changes in the industry, could it finally be that they then turn their attention to legalizing cannabis and marijuana use in Wisconsin so that we're not an island of prohibition? Is that what's been taking so long? Is that they had to figure out the alcohol industry first? I would like to think that this could lead to good things because right now, you know, the system doesn't work properly for alcohol and it sure as heck doesn't work for marijuana.
Yeah, I strongly doubt it. I feel like the only way that marijuana is going to get legalized in Wisconsin is if I don't know if all of the current Republicans either just start smoking it themselves publicly and they're just like, yeah man, this is chill, and they legalize it, or I don't know, it seems so far-fetched that any of them would even come remotely close to considering the idea.
Well, I guess I appreciate that little splash of reality, shall we say, in my two minutes, maybe three minutes of optimism there before you reminded me of what exactly we're dealing with here.
Sorry, but, or you're welcome. I'm not sure which.
Right. But I'm just, again, encouraged that after decades of talking about the three-tier system in Wisconsin and some of the ways that that has, you know, hamstrung people at all levels of the industry, that that's going to be fixed. I mean, you look at all the differences just from state to state. You still have how many people from Minnesota come over here every Sunday, because I think Minnesota still has no alcohol sales on Sunday, or at least only for what's called 3-2 beer and something weaker. But otherwise you have to come across the state. So, you know, Minnesotans are bringing their money over here for that. Meanwhile, Wisconsinites are going to start bringing their money to Minnesota to buy cannabis products. It's all such a jumbled mess about, you know, the money that goes between state lines one way or the other.
Yeah, Minnesota, currently you can buy alcohol for off-premise consumption from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday to Saturday, and on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. So you can, but it ends 4 hours earlier.
So again, you got the hours, just the lack of consistency. And by the way, when I talk about money going back and forth across, I'm reminded that there was a story a few days ago that the tuition reciprocity agreement between Wisconsin and Minnesota may be getting overhauled, but if it's not done properly, that reciprocity system would go away. And you know what that is it's what allows Minnesota kids to go to Wisconsin schools but pay in-state tuition, and Wisconsin kids to go to Minnesota schools and again pay in-state tuition. But Minnesota schools are more expensive because, you know, Wisconsin has had a tuition freeze here for many years, which seems good on the surface, but it means that Wisconsin has a lot of catching up to do in terms of the underfunding that has come to it from the Republican legislature. And as a result, there's some real concern that this reciprocity deal between the two states could eventually come to an end, and that would hurt schools closer to the border, you know, including like UW River Falls, UW Stout, places like that. And you and I know plenty of people who, you know, have gone from one state or the other to go to school. And do we really want to be putting up more barriers to young people coming to Wisconsin?
Yeah, I really hope that this situation can get figured out.
Yeah, we'll look at the details of that and continue to follow that story. Hans Breitenmoser is going to join us next, and we're going to talk a bit about the use of advisory referendums and much more when we come back. You're up north. A song that was not written about advisory referendums, but perhaps it should have, as we get into our topic here with our occasional visit with Hans Breitenmoser, a former member of the Lincoln County Board, a dairy farmer from up in the Merrill area. And we'll be talking a bit today about something that's related to county board experience, including looping in a current county board member. Hans, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Pat. How's it going today?
A very good thing. Well, you know, except for the chaos behind me, if I explained earlier that basically all of our furniture is piled up into like two rooms as we recarpet all the rest of the house later today. So the fact that this show has been able to go off without a hitch so far is a minor miracle. But that notwithstanding, here at the kitchen table, we've been able to continue things. And Hans, isn't there normally, you've long been a very active advocate of fair maps and getting rid of, you know, gerrymandering, which is, you know, the rigging of political maps. Don't you normally have something like that in your background? We're just getting into the whole fair maps of advisory referendum, and now you've lost your visual aid.
Yeah, I know. I had a map. I had a nice little laminated map always, you know, right behind me at my desk here to illustrate how many county boards passed resolutions against gerrymandered state maps, and how many county residents were able to vote on referendum to do the same thing. And it was a stunning illustration of how much when you allow people to express their opinions, how they do so on important issues. And so I was going to have that at my side here today, and for some reason it vaporized on me.
That's the way it always happens. It does. Elizabeth McCrank, Lincoln County board member, is with us as well. Elizabeth, good morning.
Good morning. I think that someone must have swiped my camera. Whoever swiped Hans's fair maps poster obviously took my camera, because it's not working this morning. So good morning. Thanks for having me here.
Yeah, you bet. It's nice to have you both here. Of course, we're familiar with Hans's service on the Lincoln County Board and about advisory referendums about fair maps. And Hans has made the point repeatedly that this is a topic that enjoys broad support, but again, on an advisory referendum basis, not a binding referendum, which would be something like, you know, what a school board has to do if they want to increase taxes, you know, to do some work. So I just want to make sure we spell out for the listeners the difference in topics. We're talking about advisory referendums here, which can be a very useful tool to gauge public opinion and to demonstrate public opinion to others. But it can also be used in a different way, as legislative Republicans recently did, putting up advisory referendums on the April ballot, things that were already in state law, but essentially using the questions as a way to gin up turnout to benefit conservative Supreme Court Justice Dan Kelly. And yet these same legislative Republicans are now looking to prevent local units of government from holding advisory referendums. Elizabeth, you're a member of the Lincoln County Board. What were your thoughts when you heard that the legislature might try to prevent you and other county boards from holding advisory referendums on important issues?
Well, like you, Pat, I recognized the hypocrisy instantly, that when they wanted to use advisory referenda for for, as you said, reasons to gin up turnout in the election, they were all on board with it. But when it's actually a case of learning what the public values and wants, then they don't want anything to do with it. And that's rather stunning. My recent experience in the most recent county board meeting was that the Lincoln County is dealing with a very weighty issue. And that issue is whether we should continue to operate our local nursing home as a public institution or not. I feel like this is such an important issue. I introduced a resolution to the county board for an advisory referenda, and it was killed by one of my colleagues on the board, who also serves in the state legislature, because he said, and I quote, I feel comfortable making decisions. I don't need to ask the public their opinion, end quote. And he was supported in his position by the county board chair, also a former state legislator, who said, yeah, this is a representative democracy. We don't need to ask the public. We can do things on our own. I was stunned. I was actually stunned that we would think that representative democracy somehow gives us permission to simply dismiss the values and the desires of the public. So it was
you're
stunning.
Right. There's no you know, one clear line that says this is where, you know, public advice ends and representative democracy begins. And it does, Hans, sound like a rather convenient excuse that, you know, representative democracy is when you're taking votes on behalf of the people who elected you. An advisory referendum sounds like it could be a rather useful tool when used properly.
Well, I think it's a huge tool when used properly. And again, I'll look at the the gerrymandering issue. I mean, this was an example where county by county people were allowed to express their opinion, and it was their opinion by and large, again and again, the referendum that said, should we have a nonpartisan procedure for drawing our legislative and congressional district maps? Again and again, every county, whether it was a red county or a blue county, whether people voted exclusively for Republicans in the same election, voted handily in favor of having a nonpartisan procedure to draw these lines. So that was a very, very good example of an advisory referendum, basically a means by which we, the people, are allowed to express our opinions and express to our legislators what we want them to do. I'm a huge fan of representative democracy, and I do think that it, when you're put in a leadership role, sometimes you have to put your big boy pants on and make some decisions on behalf of your constituents. And it is the case that there are things that are complicated and they're so far into the weeds that, you know, we probably shouldn't have, you know, referendums on every 98 cent detail, to be sure. But when we're talking about advisory referendums, I feel like this is a means by which our legislators can get the actual pulse of the situation and really get to understand what their constituents want. But that means we have to have a legislature who is interested in doing what their constituents want, not just for their handpicked voters to do what those folks are looking for. So the gerrymandering one was, I think, just a stark example. And it was interesting, too, because it was such an important advisory referendum. The failure to get, these maps drawn fairly has a direct impact on all the other things that the legislature does.
So to get it back to a from the state level to the local level here, Elizabeth, this in your case deals with a county nursing home, and this is something that has been. I mean, I covered it as a little cub reporter in the mid '80s when Eau Claire and Chippewa and Clark counties and Barron, and they were all deciding, you know, what to do about county-run nursing homes, and some kept them, some sold them and privatized them, some closed them down. And this is a big deal at every county level. And it seems odd to me as an outsider, Elizabeth, that in Lincoln County, the county board wouldn't want to know what is the current, you know, state of mind of people who will show up and vote on an advisory referendum about something as important as a nursing home.
Well, exactly. You know, part of the reason that we have that representative democracy is the complexity and the volume of work that has to be done, even by local officials. If we ask the public to weigh in on all of the routine work that we do, as Hans says, you know, we fall so far behind just in terms of workload, we'd never get anything done. And you know, the public would get fatigued. You can't run it like it's a town meeting all the time for every single conditional use permit request or zoning issue. So, you know, we use this for the most important, the weightiest issues. And to me, throwing out advisory referenda, it's a little bit like, now my background is in carpentry and furniture making. It's a little bit like taking tools out of your tool bag and saying, now just work with the tools that are left behind. And we're only going to let you have one. You can only have binding referenda. Now, you know, nobody would go out with one tool in their tool bag. And for me, it's a non-starter to throw away the tools you have for making sure that you customize government for the people that you serve. That's what we're doing. We're not supposed to be making government serve ourselves. So.
Yeah. And, you know, and this too is different than the way there's a way the needle could move in the exact opposite direction from this. And that is to have even more referenda that would be binding by something called initiative and referendum, which you have in some states, but not here in Wisconsin. When we hear all the time, well, why can't the people vote about this abortion ban that dates back to 1849? Well, because there isn't a mechanism in Wisconsin law that allows people to petition to get a ballot question for something that would, you know, change state law. It's something that could be considered. But Hans, I wonder if, again, you've got a case of people, shall we say, hiding behind representative democracy. Once you've rigged the maps, do they really want people kind of bypassing you and writing laws, much less asking for advice?
Yeah. Well, you know, at this point, I'd be tickled if they would just actually look at our advice. And I think if, but again, they don't have to, you know, that's the issue. And that's the problem that firstly needs to be solved. We need to get an actual representative democracy. We need to get a system back that says that, you know, that the maps are drawn by a nonpartisan procedure rather than drawn by a political club. And once we get that done, then you're going to see legislation that more represents what people actually want. I mean, where we're bumping into one another here is that time and again, whether it's, you know, as you referred to earlier, legalized marijuana, you know, expanding the badger care. There's so many things that if you ask the people what they want, that's what they want. We don't get it because of how screwed up the maps are.
Right. And that includes in what would be called red states, where Medicaid has been expanded because, again, the people were able to vote and recognize a good thing and move beyond partisanship for that. Elizabeth, we're talking to Elizabeth McCrank, Lincoln County board member, and Hans Breitenmoser. Elizabeth, have you had discussions with this, with your own legislators about this attempt to ban it, local advisory referendums?
Well, I haven't. The only time I see my representative, ironically, is at the county board meetings. And as I say, he was the person who spearheaded the rejection of this resolution.
And who made is it that?
That's Representative Calvin Callahan. This is the 35th district up here, which is Maryland, Tomahawk, Anago, and a little bit of, I think, Burnham Wood and Hamburg. So it's just north of Wausau. And he's not terribly responsive. And I mean, he made his position quite clear, which is that he doesn't need to talk to the public.
Well, so where do we go from here, Elizabeth? Is this a matter that it can still be perhaps discussed? People can approach their legislators and talk to them about what their feelings on the subject. Where does this go from here?
Well, that's a great question. I have heard in the community that there is a grassroots effort. I have not been involved with it, but there are people who are circulating petitions to then present to the county board. So I know that there is a large portion of our community up here that wanted to be heard on this. And this is a big enough issue. I mean, if we're all lucky enough to get old, we may need this nursing home. And so people are looking at this and saying, you know, for people who have paid their taxes for 30, 40 or 50 years, we may all need this. And we want to be part of the decision. So that's where it's going.
We've really come, Hans, in that whole notion of, you know, when she mentioned signing petitions, can you in fact petition your government in the United States? And right. And if so, to what end, right? Because right. Look, if the people were going to get, you know, their will done, as you mentioned, you know, the Democrats in the legislature actually proposed referendums on the abortion ban and on gun safety rules and on things like that. But, you know, Republicans in the legislature said no dice on that. But I would imagine your advice, as it always has been for Fair Maps, is to stay in contact with legislators anyway. And if you can't let them know what you think at the ballot box, let them know by email, phone call, or buttonhole them.
Yes, yes. There are other means by which we can reach out to them. And unfortunately, they're unresponsive to a great extent because of how the fox is watching the hen house in this case. But yeah. That doesn't mean we should give up. That means we should only work that much harder to keep reaching out and keep talking with people on both sides of the aisle amongst our friends and family to explain the situation to them and to make them understand that we get good government when we have actual representation and how important it is to have these fair maps.
It reminds me of some medical school advice that they always give out. If you don't want to find a fever, don't take their temperature. Hans Breitenmoser, Elizabeth McCrank. So nice to talk to both of you. Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you, Pat.
All right, we will be back. Chad Holmes should be joining us next, right after this break. You're up north.
I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts, bare man. I breathe the mountain.
Chad Holmes joins us now on Bull Falls Radio in Wausau. Has a show on weekday mornings, 8 to 10 a.m., meaning he's taking some time out of his show preparation to join us. And it's going to be a busy show today, Chad. Good morning. There was breaking news overnight from the Wausau School Board. What has come to pass over there?
Well, it feels like it's been a longer process, but it was only about 2 months ago when the news broke about the complaint of an Asian American student at Wausau East High School against the Wausau East band teacher. And after a very quick investigation, as you well know, the school district decided that while there was some unease with the comments, they decided that it did not go to the level of either a significant suspension or termination, and that led to a lot of issues within the family and the Asian American community here in Wausau. And last night there was a Wausau school board meeting, and after the meeting they went into closed session to discuss a personnel issue, and word has come down that Robert Perkins, the Wausau East band teacher, has resigned his position.
And that is noted as well by Natalie Albert, who has been covering this for USA Today Network Wisconsin, Jamie Rokas, all in the Wausau Daily Herald, saying that, again, Perkins is no longer employed by the Wausau School District. We had outlined last week the multiple investigations and potential investigations that were going to go on. And rather than continue to dwell on the homophobic and, you know, racial slurs that this teacher hurled at this particular student, I just want to maybe tie a bow on this the same way that we did last week. And that is, it's just about following the proper process. And if you'll excuse me, I'm going to go far afield for just a moment here and make again the same point about the Trump classified documents case. If he had returned all the documents, even though he improperly took them, but if he had returned them the same way that, you know, President Biden, Vice President Pence, and others had done, you wouldn't be in such a mess if you follow the proper procedures. And that's exactly, well, not exactly, but that's basically what we're seeing with the Wausau School District and the school board, is just follow this through and don't make it look like, you know, you were being almost as hostile toward the complaining student as the teacher appears to have been.
100%. I mean, again, and I think you hit it on the head, because that's kind of the way that I want to discuss it today on my program, is I think any fair-minded individual realizes that the behavior that was put towards this student, and again, again, it's not an adult. This was a student who had to deal with, I think, inappropriate comments and behavior. But that's bad, of course. But then the way it was responded to, where people who should have known better, people that should have been able to follow the written guidelines, they completely dropped the ball. And it led to, I think, a couple of months of really unnecessary strife within the family of the student, within the Asian American community, and with the community itself. It was really just such an unforced error. And I just hope that everybody that was involved in this realizes that mistake, that, oh, it's not all well that ends well, that make sure this does not happen again. Just follow your procedures, follow what you're supposed to do, and treat everybody fairly, because that was really the main problem. Obviously the underlying behavior is ultimately the main problem, but again, it just added such an unforced error to the entire situation.
And I will say again, I will draw the parallel to the Keele School District a year ago, where, again, if an investigation had just been allowed to, you know, unfold, then there wouldn't have been nearly the, you know, the heated rhetoric and the threats of violence that were seen. But when right-wing activists decided to get involved and alert national media in an attempt to short-circuit the investigation, that's when things got worse. I forget which major sports coach said, trust the process. the process is there for a reason. And then if it doesn't go well, then, you know, then there are appeals and things like that. But if there is a process in place, step one is to follow the process. Now, as for the show itself, I'm sure that will be a topic, and as will the Trump indictment. But tell me a little bit more about either what you've been talking about or what's ahead, man, on the Chad Holmes show.
Oh, today will be a little bit of fun, as you well know, because once in a while I'll bring on our old friend Oliver Burrows to go.
Oliver,
gonna go outside the bubble. I'm gonna find out why Republicans are so gung ho on supporting Donald Trump here on Indictment Day.
Now wait a minute. I haven't talked to Oliver in some time here. Is Oliver somebody who you think is going to come on and be a Trump defender, no, or one of those who says, look, I am a mainline conservative, but I'm not going to defend Donald Trump in this case?
One thing I want to find out is, I mean, he's got contacts within that community. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to find out just what's the thinking behind it, because again, the party of law and order, and
right,
and again, something that we don't hear people saying, oh, he's innocent. No, it's, oh, what about the emails? What about Biden? Oh, get back to, what is the philosophy here? What is the ultimate philosophy here? Is it, you know, hard on crime when it involves minorities and people don't have means? I mean, sometimes it feels that way. Even if you look at the New York subway situation, I mean, or stand your ground. I mean, there are always a little, you can have these aspects where it's like, oh yeah, we're tough on crime, except.
Yes, law and order for thee, but not for me.
Exactly. I want to kind of delve a little bit into that.
Sure. All right. Well, that will be a very interesting discussion. I have no doubt about that. And in our remaining minute or two here, I just want to say again, the endurance that you bring into covering high school sports. And you said as much recently, posting, you don't count how many high school sports broadcasts you've done, but it was another significant number, but it's something that you love. And that's why you've been doing it for a quarter century. And hopefully for another 25 years, you thanked, the radio management, but especially thanked, you know, the parents, the athletes, and then all the local businesses who support it. Because again, these things, you love what you're doing, but it's always better with a paycheck, because these things don't just happen out of thin air. They happen with community support.
Absolutely. And our terrific salespeople are already getting to work on our new season. Now we get a little bit of a break. We will get back going in about 2 months. But again, for those folks who have been on board, always appreciative, because without them, we couldn't do it. And hopefully folks who appreciate what we do, because again, as I've said so many times, being on the radio, having a radio license as Civic Media does, there's a responsibility. And one of the great things that Civic Media does, whether it's through news or whether whether it's through discussion, whether it's through events that we're part of, and through play-by-play sports, we're very much connected. So again, looking forward to having a little bit of a break with a little less travel here, and then we'll get going back with it when football starts in mid-August.
Yeah, go do something fun for yourself, at least for a little while. You've most definitely earned it.
2 weeks. I'm counting the days. I'm counting the days to get away for a week. So
there you go. All right, enjoy it. Chad, have a great show. Thanks for visiting.
Thank you, Pat.
All right. So Chad coming up from 8 to 10 on Bull Falls Radio. Other folks will be hearing Earl Ingram. Some of you in Wisconsin Rapids will have WFHR mornings. You in Madison, you'll be hearing Stephanie Miller. And our civic media stations on the western side of the state about to hear Stu Daniels. Wherever you are, have a great Tuesday. We'll see you tomorrow.